from the second chapter of the Song of Songs, beginning with verse 8. The voice of my beloved, look, he comes leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, come away, for now the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs. The vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the covert of the cliff, let me see your face and let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine and I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies. Until the day breathes and the shadows flee, turn my beloved like a gazelle or a young stag on the cleft mountains. The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scriptures. We come today to the book, Song of Songs, which might be a little confusing to you because this is the only book of the Bible that goes under several aliases. The book calls itself the Song of Songs, although when you translate that out of Hebrew, some English Bibles call it the Canticle of Canticles. And because the first line in the book also attributes the book to Solomon, even though it was written long after Solomon's kingship, it sometimes is called the Song of Solomon. So because the book calls itself the Song of Songs, that's the word that's the title I'm going to use throughout this sermon. This book is unlike any other book of the Bible because it is made up entirely of romantic love poems between a man and a woman. You have the misfortune of having to listen to a sermon on this book delivered by a grouchy old man. The poems, I must warn you, get fairly graphic and fairly erotic as we read through them. The first line of the very first poem in the voice of a woman decrees, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. And the poem goes on with her wanting this guy to do other things with her, things that would require them to get a room, as we might say today. The woman complains that her brothers have been making her work outside and her skin has gotten too dark. Remember, this is a culture where pale skin is considered attractive and a good tan is considered something that makes you look ugly. That's their culture. She celebrates, however, that black is beautiful and asserts that she is beautiful in spite of her dark skin, and her lover needs to take note of that and acknowledge it. She invites him to see the beauty that is in her that others may not see. The woman in the poetry of this book, the woman's part, also takes issue with men who believe that they are the ones who should control women's bodies and their activities. The woman poet in Song of Songs asserts that she controls her own body and her own life. There are good scholars who believe that this book was actually written by a woman, perhaps the only book of the Bible to be written by a female author. There is strong evidence to indicate that it was not Solomon who wrote it. But beyond that, the actual identity of the author is lost to us, or perhaps multiple authors, because there are multiple poems in this, so the authors are really lost to us in the mists of time. The Song of Songs is both sensual and sensuous. And while we tend to use those terms interchangeably, I want to distinguish between the more accurate definitions of them. If we say that a matter is sensual, we are implying that there are sexual and erotic dynamics that are going on. If a matter is sensuous, on the other hand, it means that we are engaging our five senses, sight, sound, touch, taste, smell, to be able to enjoy and appreciate the things of life. A church potluck is sensuous, and I've been to many of them, but I don't ever recall being at a church potluck that was sensual, although I don't know what goes on in the kitchen at all of them. But the Song of Songs is both sensual and sensuous. Many of the lines in the Song of Songs play with double meanings and sexual innuendo. Here are some of them. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me into the banqueting house, and his intention toward me was love. Oh, that his left hand were under my head and his right hand embraced me. My beloved, look, there he stands, gazing in our windows. Today, of course, we'd call the police on that one. Upon my bed at night, I sought him whom my soul loves. When I found him, I held him and brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle that feed among the lilies. Your channel is an orchard of pomegranates with all the choicest fruit. Blow upon my garden and let my beloved come to his garden and eat its choicest fruits. I had put off my garment. How could I put it on again? My beloved thrust his hand into the opening, and my inmost being yearned for him. Let us go out early to the vineyards and see whether the vines have budded, whether the grape blossoms have opened, and the pomegranates are in bloom, and there I will give you my love. In these back and forth poems between a young man and a young woman, we encounter not only a great deal of sensuality, but a great deal of sensuousness, joyful descriptions of nature itself. It is in Song of Songs that we have the image of a gazelle leaping upon the mountains, vineyards in full blossom, a rose of Sharon, a beautiful house made with cedar beams and rafters of pine. There is the poetry that I read to you at the beginning of the sermon. Now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, and the time of singing has come. The voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. There is the picture of a stag on the cleft of a mountain, wild does and young fawns, clusters of pomegranates, flocks of sheep, honey and milk and spices, splendid gardens, perfumes, aloes, myrrh. There is the image of the morning dew, ravens and doves, sapphires, gold, silver, many jewels, ivory, alabaster. There's the sun and the moon. We have wine and palm trees, the color purple, apples, flashing fires and raging flames, and many waters. Eat, my friends, drink and be drunk with love. Now, these poems were written in a culture that had different standards for women than we have today in terms of what made for a beautiful woman. The standards for men are pretty much the same today as they were then. In the Song of Songs, we read that men were expected to smell nice, move athletically, have sweet voices, be sure that there was only one woman and no competition, be sure and take her out to dinner, and come and rescue her and take her away from the flat life she's living. Those images of the good man are probably still with us today. But our standards for what makes for beautiful women have changed. In these poems, Here are some of the things that we read about what makes for a fine-looking woman. Your eyes are doves, your hair like a flock of goats. Your teeth are like shorn sheep. Your lips are thin and like a crimson thread. Your cheeks are puffy and look like pomegranates. Your neck is like the Tower of David. Your breasts are like two fawns. There is no flaw in you. Your navel is a deep bowl. Your belly is a mound of wheat. Your nose like the Tower of London. My guess is there aren't many anniversary cards you can get at Walgreens that have this description of your beloved anymore. Now, because this book is so sensual and so sensuous, many Christian teachers through the years have said it's not really about nature or sex or the physicality of life, but rather it is merely an extended metaphor to describe the love of Christ for his church. And while we always welcome metaphors to try and help us understand better the relationship of Christ and his church, Spirit-filled people through the centuries have found great meaning in the more graphic and literal understanding of the poetry in Song of Songs. It's ironic that the people who almost always insist on reading the Bible literally, when they get to the Song of Songs, suddenly want to start interpreting it figuratively. They have decided that these poems are not at all an affirmation of carnal love, but simply an unfortunate choice of metaphors to describe the passions of a non-incarnate God. It is good for us to remember the first line of the Apostles' Creed, "I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth." In the early church, there was such a sense that all things about the body were dirty and all things about sex were wrong that some of the early Christians had even proposed that there were two gods, the great God who gave us spirit and all the things of the spirit, and a lesser, more evil God who created the body and the world around. Hence, we have in the argument of whether there was an evil God that created the body and sex and the world around, hence we have the first line of the Apostles' Creed, "I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth." There was actually an argument about that. And what's interesting is that there are still tinges, well, more than a tinge, of the sense among church people that sex is just wrong. As we're reading through each of these books of the Bible, we're asking, what's the bad news, what's the good news, and what is the practical application? The bad news is implied in the Song of Songs rather than articulated overtly. These poems express desire that has not yet come to being satisfied or to fruition. And so we understand in an implied way that not every season of life is the season of spring. And not every stage of life is the stage of two young people who are full of vibrancy and only paying attention to the beauty and the good things of life. We understand as we read through the Song of Songs, the bad news is that not every yearning or desire has a happy ending to it. In fact, it is very difficult for some people to read the Song of Songs. People who are very lonely, when they read the Song of Songs, feel a great deal of pain. And people who are in relationships that are abusive or dysfunctional or in trouble feel a great deal of anguish. It's very hard to read the Song of Songs. The good news of the Song of Songs is that spirituality and sexuality are compatible. They go together. Our sexuality, the physical world, whether we're talking about sensuality or sensuousness, is something that's given to us by God. The Song of Songs, as we read through it, echoes the Garden of Eden And we think about the world as God wanted it to be at the very beginning, a world that's filled with pleasure, a world where Adam and Eve are naked and know no shame, a world where people were able to enjoy all of the splendor of creation in that garden. And we see that good news. We see that God's love comes to us in a wholeness, in a holistic sense. There has been through the history of the Christian church a false teaching that there are different kinds of love, that there is, and these Greek words are used to try to prove that there are different kinds of love. There's agape, which is the highest form of love, which is God's love, and there's philos, which is the love that brothers or sisters might have for each other. And we've been taught that there's eros, which is sort of the love of the flesh, and so forth. But when we read these words in the Greek Bible, they're all used interchangeably. So wherever this teaching came from, it came from somebody who wants, again, who's a heretic, who believes that somehow God is up here, and God really is not as intricately involved with the physical, sensuous or sensual world as God is in any other sense of life. And so, but this was a teaching that's kind of been put out there through the centuries. And yes, there are different words for love, and they tend to point to different things, but in the Bible or in usage, one is never better than the others because God's love is holistic. God's love has to do with relationships. God's love has to do with mystery. God's love has to do with the body, with the physical world, and with the joy of all that has been created. And so this false separation is something that it's good news to know there is no separation in these understandings. The body is not dirty, and eros is not an inferior form of love. It's all from God. And it's all good. And as God says in that story of creation in Genesis, whenever the world is created, in fact, whenever sexuality is created, whenever the world is created, God says it's good. Whenever sexuality is created in Genesis 1, God said it is very good. So there is no distinguishing. And that's the good news. The practical understandings then that we get from the book of Song of Songs. It's important that we read this as a description of joy and love and not as a prescription. There are many people who want to read this as a prescription to say, well, you know, the only way that you can have sensuous or sensual love is if you have a young man and a young woman. And we drive that point home in many different ways. But the fact is, Song of Songs is not prescriptive. It does not limit this joy of the body or this joy of the world to just the young or to just certain pairings of people. The fact is, you can have this kind of love even if you don't have a nose like the Tower of Lebanon. You can have this type of love if you're a man and you can't run like a gazelle. You can have this type of love if you're a woman and you don't have a belly that looks like a mound of wheat or breasts that still run around like gazelles in the woods. You can have this type of love at any age with any matching. It's not a book that is prescriptive. It is a book that is descriptive. The fact is, you can have this type of love and this type of joy all of life. A second thing that it's important for us, I think, from a practical standpoint, is to realize that in the urgings of the woman who writes these poems, let's not restrict our understanding of beauty to cultural norms. She complains that because of she's been left out in the sun too long and has to work out in the vineyards, her brothers have forced her out there, that she doesn't look like a beautiful woman ought to look according to those standards. And she protests against that. The same as in you don't have to look like a Barbie doll to be beautiful. Every culture has its standards of beauty. And all of those standards are very, very limiting and very, very humiliating to most people in that culture. And so from the Song of Songs, we get this practical takeaway, to not allow our own understandings of beauty to be defined by the culture in which we live. And then finally, from a practical standpoint here, the book of Song of Songs urges us to not restrict our understanding of sexuality to having sex. Sexuality is not about working one's way through all the chapters of the Kama Sutra. Sexuality is a gift from God, and it's a mysterious gift from God, and it stays with us all of our lives. A woman who's had a double mastectomy and a hysterectomy is still a splendid woman. And a man who's 90 years old and has had a stroke and who drools and who needs help going to the bathroom is still a man. The Song of Songs remind us of this gift of sexuality that is not limited to the ways that our culture so narrowly defines it. Our sexuality is with us our whole lives, and it is something that is to be respected and affirmed by ourselves, and it's something that we can affirm in each other. One of the earliest lessons that I got in this was very early in my ministry. It was probably in my late 20s, and went to a workshop on sexual morality and sexual ethics. And we had to divide into small groups where we were talking with six or seven people around our table. Again, I was in my late 20s at this point, I think. And I was in a group with an older woman. I suppose she was probably in her 70s, rather large woman, and she'd been a widow for a while. And as we were talking about, I think that the question was, what does your sexuality mean to you? And when it came time, I was just kind of wondering, I wonder what this woman's going to say, because I'd never talked to anybody older who talked about their own sexuality. So I was kind of curious as to what this woman was going to say. And so what she said was, she says, I've been a widow for about 15 years. And she said, but I'm still a woman. And she says, I don't really want to have sex with anybody at this point. But she says, sometimes I go for months and months and nobody even touches me. Sometimes, she says, nobody ever says to me that I'm beautiful. And she says, and I spend a lot of time, you know, before I go out, trying to make sure I'm dressed well and my hair, that I smell nice. And she says, nobody ever notices or nobody ever says anything about that. She says, it's not that I need to have sex, but I'm still a woman. And I still need that sense of affirmation and appreciation from people for that. And it was eye-opening for me. I've never heard anybody that honestly and that openly sharing how important that was. And I realized that it was important. And so that's a practical understanding that I get from this book, The Song of Songs, is that this joy, this goodness of how we've been created, this sensuality and this sensuousness of who we are, is a gift from God that stays with us from the moment we are born and people say, boy or girl, until the moment we die. A wonderful, precious gift of God.